Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks. Hey, welcome to the Harold Torn Podcast. This is episode 14. Isn't that crazy? On today's episode, we're talking about the Pro Tour. We're talking about new Magic the Gathering sets. We're talking about Kai Buddha. We're talking about Pauper EDH. We're talking about video games. What are we not talking about on this episode? I guess you'll have to find out. After the break, I am joined by Derek of the Pauper EDH Rules Committee to talk about what I already said. Pauper EDH. It's a fascinating way to play Magic the Gathering. It's a fascinating conversation. I know you will love this episode. Thanks for listening. Hello, it's time for the Harold's Horn. My name is Cal Jones, and today I am joined by the wonderful Emma. Today she is very sleepy. She's just come back from so much travel. Say hello, Emma.
Hello, Emma.
Emma, how are you on this fine Wednesday?
I am God's sleepiest and silliest soldier.
I am also joined by Dan, yoga's biggest fan. Say hello, Dan.
I really consider myself a weekend warrior at this point with the yoga, but I appreciate that. It's very kind of you. Hello, gamers.
I do got to say this before we get into it. I did tag Dan in a tweet the other day. It reminded me so much of them. Mm-hmm. It was just this tweet that was like, seeing discourse as someone who's outside too much. It was like, wow, this is just like when two sparrows fight over the same sunflower seed. I like to picture that's how Dan responds to online drama.
It's what I think about in the woods a lot. We'll get to it in the co-host corner.
All right, let's get into the episode. And welcome back. As always, we are going to hop directly right into the news. The biggest news of the last 2 weeks, as it so often seems to be, was that there was a Pro Tour. This one was a very special Pro Tour indeed, since it featured for draft and, if we're being honest, for the entirety of Constructed, the newest Magic the Gathering set for the next one day after recording, Pro Tour Modern Horizons 3, baby. It was a Modern Horizons 3 event from top to bottom. We had 6 total rounds of Modern Horizons 3 Limited. We had many, many, many rounds of Modern Horizons 3 Constructed. And I do mean Modern Horizons 3 Constructed because, well, if you look at the metagame breakdown, every single deck that had a Syria share was basically defined and molded by brand new cards from Modern Horizons 3. Emma, what was the most played deck of the Pro Tour?
I think it was the one with the Simic Bird that does the thing that makes the games go really long, and it's very play draw dependent, and it was very painful to watch on coverage. I think it's Nadu, right?
Nadu, so this is how the Pro Tour went. It was Pro Tour Nadu. We've had like another Pro Tour that was so dominated by a card or a deck that we can like name it. There's like the Hogak Pro Tour, there's the Eldrazi Winter Pro Tour, and now we have maybe the most dominant performance of the three with the Nadu Pro Tour. Nadu made up almost, I believe, 40% of the metagame. And it had a over 55% win rate. Together with Nadu decks, like naturally having to beat each other along the way, because there were so many of them, and a great many players coming into the Pro Tour knowing that it would almost certainly be like the deck to beat, the most played deck. Going 55%+ win rate on the event is just kind of insane. That's egregious. I don't know what else to say. And I was really excited for the Pro Tour. I think I mentioned that on the last episode. I love watching Constructed Magic. I love watching high level Constructed. And man, unfortunately, watching people move a bunch of cardboard around, attaching a Shuko over and over again to effectively draw cards or ramp is not the most entertaining. I gotta admit it.
I saw just some quick clips of it, and it was truly just like watching paint dry. It was terrible. Although I really hope that this entire event is defined by Cedric Phillips and his little song that he made.
Yeah. Make a people. Yeah.
Exactly. Hopefully that will enter the forever like a gone of magic.
Now that's good commentary.
Exactly. Exactly. And as one does, there was, of course, a finals at the Pro Tour, a great Nadu Mir in the finals, in which Simon Nielsen, last year's player of the year and definitely this year's player of the year favorite, I think at this point, won it. Won a Pro Tour. I believe it was Simon Nielsen's first Pro Tour win, which is pretty insane. It is always wild to me hearing like the names that I know, like Simon Nielsen. It's crazy to me that that's this first Pro Tour. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that Reed Duke finally won his first Pro Tour when, you know, I would have assumed if I would had paid less close attention, he had won like two or something. But great to see Simon Nielsen win, and I cannot help but feel that unless something really drastic changes, Simon Nielsen has now locked up his second Player of the Year trophy in a row, which is pretty awesome.
He is a very good Magic player, and it is great to see Simon really come into form over the last 2 years. So in Europe, we've known that Simon Nielsen's been great for ages. He has this name called Sleep In Simon when he normally misses like the first two rounds because he sleeps in, but still runs hot at an event, still top eight Grand Prix. When he won Grand Prix Birmingham in 2018, he slept in on day two, lost his first round and won the GP. It was a standard GP.
That's the heart of a champion.
And this was back when he had like the tie with the badges, which was very iconic for Simon. Fantastic. At the time,
a tie with badges.
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, he had a tie with badges. So yeah, it's not a surprise for me because I've seen Simon do so well at just these European events before, you know, back when Grand Prix were a thing. And yeah, he's just on an insane tear. I don't know when it's going to end.
I personally don't really want to see it to end. I would love to watch Simon Nielsen just win Player of the Year over and over again because he's a great guy, great player.
He also does like Flesh and Blood Nationals. He also had a thesis that he wrote recently. It's like, what is this guy on?
Some people are just insane. A little too cracked at life. The biggest loser, we have the biggest winner from the Pro Tour, and that was Simon Nielsen and Nadu. The biggest loser of the Pro Tour was a deck that I wanted to be really good so bad. That is Ruby Storm. Ruby Storm, the also new to modern archetype, definitely a classic Magic archetype, I would say, in Mono Red Storm or similar. Thanks to the printing of Ruby Medallion and Rao Monsoon Mage, we got to finally see it here in Modern for the first time. However, it ended up with a win rate at the Pro Tour in the mid-30s. Now, granted, part of that, you know, these Pro Tour, it is always hard to evaluate how good a deck may be in the abstract day-to-day from a Pro Tour metagame, because these Pro Tour metagames are pretty, like, inward looking. A lot of these pro players, when they came and made their deck like choice for the weekend, if they weren't playing Ruby Storm, they knew that a lot of players were going to be playing Ruby Storm. So it was easy for them to include the most popular sideboard card for the weekend, Dranith Magistrate, or the third most popular sideboard card for the weekend, Damping Sphere, in their deck. And you play a Dranith Magistrate against that Ruby Storm deck, it is probably not winning the game. So I hope the deck like actually continues to be good, because I would love to see something like this, but
I think there are some definite obstacles to it in Modern, because if you think about where the deck Ruby Storm is successful in Legacy, like the power in that deck is being able to use cards like LED, cards like Chrome Mox, and specifically using LED and Echo of Eons to be able to recharge your hand, be able to play things out on turn one really quickly. Rao and Ruby Storm are both obviously extremely powerful cards, but I think Storm has had its issues in the past couple of years in Modern and will continue to do so as long as there are some pretty powerful answers and honestly, like, just more powerful four-color Omnaths to be playing.
Emma, are you a big Ruby Storm enjoyer? Did you want to jam a little bit of Storm in Modern?
So I'm not the biggest Storm gamer because I don't have the brain power for it. However, I think it's a really cool deck. I'm really glad there's a deck that's ported from Legacy that is now into Modern. That's always cool to see. And I think it's more than reasonable to play it at like an RCQ, maybe at an FNM or something. Sure, there was a lot of hate at the Pro Tour, but it was also really easy to hate out at the Pro Tour. It didn't take up a lot of sideboard slots. But if you love jamming Storm, why not? I think it's neat.
Exactly. Did you have a favorite deck at the Pro Tour, Emma?
Not really, because most of them were honestly one of the Horizons free cards. I'm biased towards Tron, so I really like the Eldrazi deck with Ugin's Labyrinth, Devour Destiny, Sowing in Myco Spawn, that kind of stuff. But I don't know if it's
kind of the
great.
Same vibe, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know how well it did at all.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way, where it's just like, I don't know really what to be excited for here, because it really is just Modern Horizons 3, the Pro Tour, and it's like, yeah, all the cards are good for Modern Horizons 3, I get it.
I will say Javier's top 8 deck of Jeskai Control with Flage looked cool.
Yeah, Flage is undoubtedly extremely powerful, and I'm kind of surprised I didn't hear much more about it. Like, Nadu obviously took up the majority of the conversation, but it's an extremely powerful Magic card. I'm excited to see more people play it.
Yeah. Who knew a Infernatite strapped to a Lightning Helix was really good?
I really wish that it did a little bit better at the Pro Tour than it did, because it was also just such a sick deck. I love seeing Flage succeed, kind of like Emma pointed this card out a couple episodes ago. It is a sick card.
Yeah.
It is a sick card. Mason Clark also designed it. He's great.
It's true. He was just on the Scribe Babies podcast, which I am the editor of, and he told a fun story about how that card basically stayed the exact same through the entire design process from his thought to finished product.
Which is extremely rare when it comes to designing cards for Wizards. They go through like dozens of iterations, but that one stuck around.
Maybe we should just let Mason also design the final Titan. I believe it has been officially named, but it does not. It has been officially named. I don't remember what it has been named, but I know there's not a card for it yet. We have Uro, we have Kroxa, and now we have Flage, and there is also another one.
Is this also in the art for the card Binding of the Titans? That's my only real knowledge of Flage before it was printed.
Oh, what card did you say?
Binding of the Titans, I think, is the title of it. I know that's where Mason knew that Flage existed because of the art on this card, and during the design process, do y'all know that this card exists, or this character exists and hasn't been designed yet?
I think it's been named somewhere. I'm just not exactly sure where. We only have the greatest of Magic the Gathering knowledge here on this podcast. But hey, I'm happy to see some cool new cards in the format. I just wish that Wizards could figure out how to design something like Modern Horizons 3 without it simply rotating the format. We joked about Modern Horizons 3 rotating Modern on the last episode, and here we are with a rotated Modern.
Do you find it insane that Modern rotates a lot more than Standard?
Yes, I do, Emma. I do find that.
I think that might be.
Everyone says yes in unison.
Yes. Yes, I would say that's a problem. I saw a tweet recently that was definitely some of the appeal of what Commander and Modern and even Legacy used to hold for a lot of gamers was that it was the home for your old cards. Granted, not all of them. There are a great many cards that never quite made the cut, but it always used to be the oldest stuff is on average from the past, and every two sets or so we get another great banger that slots into one deck and it changes the metagame a little bit, or we get a cool new sideboard piece and that kind of stuff. And barring some some outlier sets, like maybe, I don't know, Eldraine or something. A lot of these formats never really saw like massive overhaul changes through the natural release of sets until Modern Horizons came along, until we started doing so many Commander precons, until insert random new cards, even in standard sets, are so powerful that they get played everywhere anyways.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it with Eldraine. Like, I think Eldraine is certainly the turning point of where we start to see a huge ramp up in the power level in general of Magic cards. And yeah, to the point now where it's so hard to find anything new under the sun that hasn't just been invented by WotC the other day. It's, you know, it's like, what can you really do to compete with a better Psychotog that makes the best deck in Legacy even better? Yeah. You know,
It's also hard to compete with. Also interesting, Eldraine was the first proper set that introduced collector boosters and the booster fun stuff. So, might also be a quinky dink.
You know, Emily, I don't believe in coincidences.
Do you not?
I don't know. That's a pretty hyperbolic statement to make, but I do certainly believe that the monetary incentives of printing cards that people want to buy in collector booster form is certainly intertwined with creating cards that are as powerful and as boring as Nadu, the Bird Seeker. I have no idea what that card is called.
Nadu, Winged Wisdom. I mean, even the design of Nadu just kind of seems like explicitly aimed at like Commander or whatever. It just seems like one of those Commander type designs that happen to be really good elsewhere.
My problem with Nadu is you can't bolt the bird.
No, I know. The four toughness is so funny.
Can't say that anymore.
So
what the hell?
Funny. So funny. Dan, can I bolt your bird?
If you want me to draw a card, but not draw a card, but maybe put a land into play, yes.
There was another big thing that did happen over the weekend. Definitely a little more bittersweet than what could have happened otherwise, I suppose. But Wizards took a couple of moments during day two to honor one of the true greats of the game, Kai Buda, the German juggernaut. The guy who's either like number one or number two on pretty much every single person's like greatest of all time, like pro Magic player list, and for great reasons. They were talking about some of his achievements, and you know, during his we're here talking about Simon Nielsen, right? An incredible player, a wonderful player, someone that many people would call the greatest player playing right now, maybe. And he has won one Pro Tour in his entire Magic the Gathering career. Kai Buda, during his big run, won a Pro Tour on average every 6 months until he had won 7 Pro Tours. Now, granted, all those caveats that you could make about like Magic being easier in the early days because everyone was less good, but Kai was less good than two. There was like not as much to know about Magic. So it's just like insane. All things being equal, it is insane to have won 7 Pro Tours. He is the only person to have won the Player of the Year trophy 4 times. He has a massive pile of other achievements. And Wizards of the Coast decided to honor Kai Buda by naming the Player of the Year award after him, the Kai Buda Player of the Year trophy. Of course, they basically did announce that this is all coming around for a quite sad reason, which is that Kai has had cancer for several years and it has now taken a turn for the worse, and I would assume is effectively terminal. It was a very bittersweet moment at the Pro Tour this weekend as the community got the chance to celebrate a legend and also, I think, mourn a legend of the game, obviously. He's only in his mid-40s. That's kind of insanely sad. But he also got to get up and chat for a bit, talk for a bit. And he pretty much just said he loves Magic. He's been playing Magic for 30 years, and he's going to be playing as much Magic as he can in the time that he has left. And of course, he backed up that claim by immediately winning the PTQ that they have for people who win, who wash out of the Pro Tour on Sunday. So he borrowed Matt Sperling's Modern deck and crushed the Pro Tour qualifier. So Kai's back on the Pro Tour because he wanted to play more Pro Tours than he he wanted to play more Pro Tours than he automatically qualifies for by being in the Hall of Fame. Another one of his achievements. That was definitely a big moment this weekend, big bittersweet moment in Magic's history. It is kind of wild to me that Magic the Gathering has been around long enough for this kind of stuff to happen. You know, that doesn't seem to happen to me a whole lot in a lot of, especially these nerdier archetypes. There's not many people who are around so long that they end up honored in this way. I don't know.
If you think about it in comparison to like other sports, making music and things like that, there's not a lot of things that you can do for 30 years. And for someone to have done it that long and be that tremendously good at it is certainly something worth celebrating. It was lovely to see the tribute to him, and lovely to see lots of pro players and people on Twitter, all sorts of Magic personalities coming out with very kind and lovely words to say about him. He truly is very sad. He's a very young guy, and as long as he's been playing, is yeah, it's very sad.
Emma, do you have anything to say about Kai Buda?
Yeah, he doesn't lose on Sunday, so that's why he won the PT qualifier on Sunday.
Exactly. True.
Proven. Also, forever proven.
It's about as good as it gets, right?
I was at MagicCon Amsterdam, and I spent a little time around like the PT area doing some coverage for Channel Fireball. On the Sunday, there was literally a queue of people wanting cards signed and hugs from him because it was a post-announcement. And Kai just seemed like he was beaming, like grinning on his face. It's like, yeah, let's talk about Magic and all this stuff. And it was very wholesome to see. I do recommend listening to the announcement if you can tolerate it. It is very emotional. There is a lot of crying, but it's Billy does a good job of just expressing the weight of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
Wizards posted it as on play.gg, I believe. They did the announcement of the Kai Buda trophy, and then there's like the Twitch clip of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I recommend watching it.
I can definitely link to it in the podcast description and all that. Yeah, Wizards definitely did good by this guy, I would say. Yeah, if you want to watch William Jensen get really emotional, and all the pros you know and love get really emotional, and Kai Buda look pretty chill the entire time.
I cried. I watched that and cried. Yeah. I was in tears. Oh, afterwards. Yeah, same. Like,
yeah,
it's totally fine.
Yep, it's very very sad. Very emotional video, but an excellent tribute to an incredible player.
Yeah, a beautiful reminder that truly is the human element of this that makes the game so strong and so much fun, getting to share it with other people and getting to know other people and have these fantastic memories associated with it.
And on to our final topic of the news here. Something that Wizards of the Coast did not do well by. Let's talk about the most recent banned and restricted announcement. The last news piece. I lied. We don't really have to. I mean, on the last episode, we kind of called it no changes to any format, including Legacy, mm-hmm. Which a lot of people did not love. It's easy to now look at Modern and say, oh, they should have preemptively banned Nadu. But obviously, they're never doing that for any reason, right? Mm-hmm. But Grief still being legal in Legacy is not having many people very happy.
Yeah, it's an incredibly powerful deck, plays extremely well on the play, obviously, can be very hard to interact with, especially if you're not a Force of Will deck. And like I said earlier, the new Psychotalk Frog is just so good, just really fills the holes in that deck that ever existed, if there were any. But pick just a Force of Will, pick just a Grief, it's just the whole package. It's really, it's a machine.
I think you find it's a frog.
Excuse me, I'm going to go delete my podcast software now.
Yeah, I was like Rescaminator. Grief Rescaminator was like a problem in Legacy pre-Modern Horizons 3.
It was definitely tier one, but like there were arguably other tier one decks that wasn't insanely but problematic.
Getting Psychic Frog now gives you like an outlet in so many ways. It's a great alternative game plan because it can get big real fast. The old versions of Rescaminator kind of had problems of like drawing the wrong pieces at the wrong times. You don't want to, the deck had a lot of problems getting rid of, like, if it drew an Atraxa, it didn't have a great way to get an Atraxa into the graveyard.
Traditionally, why some decks were stretching into red for a while for cards like Faithless Looting, but Psychotog cleaning up your mana base, or Psychofrog, cleaning up the mana base, pitching your monsters when you don't need them, drawing more cards when you're in the mid game and you've run out of gas is just incredibly powerful.
And it can get pretty dang huge.
Yeah, it can solo if you've not got the right hand to deal with it. It's something.
So the Legacy community at large was definitely not very pleased by this announcement, especially after a follow-up stream from the WotC team where there were some nice quotes implying, oh, there's no major Legacy tournaments coming up, so like, what's actually the harm of not banning Grief right now? Let's just wait. Is there ever the major Legacy events now are like the Buffalo Chicken Dip Open and
Eternal Weekend?
Yeah, there's like Eternal Weekend, but that isn't until next year. So like there's like Eternal Weekend as like the big weekend for Legacy. And like if that's the only thing we're considering, then like what are we even doing maintaining this format for like one big event a year? Like if that's all we're caring about is this one big event, everything close to that is like 5Ks that community members put on, or maybe some online events, right? Like the Modo. There's some like pretty big events on Modo, but
doesn't NRG do the occasional Legacy for like team events?
I think so. I think they even like stopped doing that once that could no longer, like they couldn't award like RCQ invites. They couldn't award RC invites to the Legacy seat player anymore, so they swapped to doing Standard, Pioneer, Modern. Which is not ideal, but it wasn't a great look. A lot of people would have liked Grief banned, and now people are calling for a nice emergency ban announcement, both to get Nadu out of Modern and to just clean up Grief in Legacy.
Well, the biggest problem was Wizards do have like a Legacy expert on staff that works for Wizards, and they were like, hey, this Grief card's pretty good. You should probably ban it. And then the powers that be went, nah, we're good.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's like not even that they're, it just like kind of makes no sense to me. Like Legacy at this point is basically, not to say like a for fun format, but it's not like it's a format you can use to qualify for the Pro Tour anymore. Most of the people who play it are a lot of the same people who've been really dedicated to the format for a long time.
You're certainly more so in it for the love of the game than anything else.
Exactly. And so like if the player base is kind of unhappy with how things are going and they're unhappy with a card, like what it's not like Wizards is really even making money directly off of Grief anymore, unless you count the elementals being on the special guest seat, which like even Brian Koval admitted to not knowing was a thing until he opened up some packs and like randomly saw one and was like, oh, even I didn't know about this. I don't think this counts as a reprint.
I felt the exact same way when I opened up an Endurance and I was like, what the hell is this doing in here?
So, yeah, I don't know.
So I think this is all under the guise that, like, MH3 is going to fix the problem, right?
Correct. But like, yes, this is all under the guise that they wanted to see how MH3 fixed.
Should presumably shake up the format. You got Chthonia Nightmare. Presumably shake up
the format. But
you got Necro Dominance. You got that bad combo deck now. So now you can play a bad combo deck, or you can play the best, better version of the best deck. Emma, which you choosing? Bad combo deck or best, better deck?
Best better deck, obviously.
Oh, ooh, gamer. We got a gamer in the house today? Okay.
Well, I saw someone being like, oh, well, vexing Bobble will counter the grief. And someone was like, my brother in Christ, but, you're on the draw. The grief is removing the vexing Bobble from your hand.
I saw someone tweet the other day, one of the new Assassin's Creed cards, Flashbang or something like that. Smoke Bomb, thank you. I think it's an artifact for 3 mana ETBs and gives all creatures Shroud. Someone, I guess, on the design team had been arguing to make it cheaper to try to interact with Nautu, but still, I think not even the answer to that.
Well, I think that's enough about the BNR, unless Emma has some hot BNR takes to add. Emma, any hot BNR takes? Will you be joining the Legacy format panel?
God, no.
I know. I'm kidding.
I'll do it. No, who was it? Koval said anybody who would take that position shouldn't have it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Wait a second. Emma took a position on the Pauper format panel.
That was thrust upon her by God.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It was her holy mission.
That was her Joan of Arc moment.
Much like the Blues Brothers.
True.
Emma's mission was to...
It was very, very Joan of Arc Blues Brothers-y.
My favorite genres.
All right.
I love that historical crossover.
Wow, Assassin's Creed sounds great.
I got the serialized John Belushi.
Well, let's move on to the final little topic that we can talk about for news for today. And that was the MC Amsterdam preview panel. Emma, you were there. What went down?
A lot of things. So there's another Magic set coming out in November.
Whoa!
Who knew there would be a release in Q4? Who knew? So this one is called Foundations, where it's basically core set, but more interesting and for newer players. So you have to think this in the perception of, hey, I got into Magic through Lord of the Rings or Marvel or Final Fantasy. How do I actually play this bloody game? And then Wizards went, ta-da, here is this Foundation set, which is standard legal. Card legality is going to be at least 5 years. So they'll be legal until 2029, but could be longer. And it's going to be 50% reprints, 50% new cards, where a lot of the cards are very simple, straightforward. It gives people a really easy way to get into Magic. And stuff like Llanowar Elves and Day of Judgment, I believe, are going to be in standard in November. So that's the kind of power level we're also talking about here.
Dan, this is going to get you back into standard?
No, but I think it's a nice alternative for people to have, as opposed to like just being a 4 standard set. Because I saw a lot of people saying, like, well, why don't you just go back to making core sets? But I don't think that's necessarily the answer for this problem. Yeah, like core sets, you said, like, they're not interesting. They're never fun. And it is part of the standard environment necessarily, where like me as an outsider, if I didn't know anything about Magic, I could look at a set that is called Foundations and understand that, like, I don't need to be so involved as to, like, need to go to FNM and compete in standard events or something like that to, like, pick up cards and learn how to play them. I think it's a really great addition to the atmosphere of Magic right now, which is so incredibly difficult for an outsider to get into.
And learning Commander is one of the worst ways to learn Magic.
Say it again for the people in the back.
So having a 1v1 format that is easy to pass and read, they even update the frame treatment that's visually accessible. Like, this is breaking news. Like, they're actively trying to make this better for new players. I'm really excited for it because I've been begging for Wizards to offer something that isn't, you can pick up with this starter commander deck, which you're still going to get confused by because there's like a dozen different keywords that you just don't know
so
about.
Much, yeah.
And it's going to be confusing because you're going to have 3 other people telling you how to play Magic when there should, in essence, be one. But no, I'm really excited for Foundations. I think it's going to do great. And it's really important to have that when you've got Final Fantasy, which is going to be the biggest release next year. And then you've got Marvel as well.
Yes, indeed. Very excited. I am like very excited, but also like very slightly apprehensive about Foundations, specifically because of the two cards or even three cards that they did show off. Because the three cards they showed off, if I recall correctly, were Day of Judgment, Llanowar Elves, and Omniscience.
They also revealed a new card.
Oh, they showed off a new one, yeah.
It was basically Glorious Anthem in Selesnya colors. So green, white, plus one, all creatures.
Yeah, simultaneously simple, but definitely powerful cards.
Exactly. I think most of my opinion, like my slight reticence here, was formed by like seeing a couple Yeoman 5 tweets, who is someone whose like opinion on Standard I do trust very much. And his concern was pretty much just like this. Like, we know what kind of effects having a one drop mana dork in Standard has. We know what that does to like how much you would like to play green, how much that makes certain stuff matter, how much that makes other stuff not matter. We also know what kind of effects having like an actual factual Wrath of God in Standard does. You know, we're pretty used these days to having like the 5 mana Wrath of God with upside and like the 6 mana exile Wrath of God, you know, in Standard at this point. We've had that kind of stuff perennially. But if I recall correctly, the last time we had a Wrath of God legal in Standard was when Day of Judgment was printed in Zendikar block and therefore was legal in Standard.
Yeah, it's been years since we've had a 4-mana Wrath that has no sort of stipulations or drawbacks or anything like that.
Yeah, just like two white, destroy all creatures. Yeah, it's been a minute since we've had that. And these cards are really interesting and like really flavorful, but what Yeoman said, and I think I kind of am apprehensively agreeing with, is these kind of effects are interesting and Standard in doses because they set like a very specific floor and a very specific ceiling. And that might be like part of the appeal. Like if designers can know, all right, we're going to have Llanowar Elves and Wog around for a long time in Standard, then we know how to design with that and we know how to make interesting stuff around that, which like, and the part of my apprehension is automatically removed when I've seen like the team of people who worked on Foundations. Like Carmen K was intimately involved with this product, and I trust Carmen K with my life when it comes to designing Magic the Gathering products. So, you know, otherwise I'm really hype about this. I do think that having a they haven't, to my knowledge, like had something legal this long in Standard basically ever since like type 1 became type 2 or whatever.
I think all the way back in the day.
I might have the name wrong here, but it feels very similar to like the Hearthstone base set.
Yeah, it's just legal.
Forever.
Perennially.
Basically.
Yeah.
Perennially legal, which is a really cool thing for Magic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I guess in that vein, I hope they are not scared to do what Hearthstone has had to do in the past, which is just be like, actually, this base set card is not Standard legal right now. Yeah. Sorry.
My only trepidation with that is then that becomes confusing for new players if you're given this thing called Foundations and you find out, oh, I can't actually play with these ones. But I think that's probably mostly covered by the thing I said earlier of like, it's not really for people who want to get into Standard so much as a thing that people can use to just understand the game better, which I tried to explain Magic to someone recently, and I was saying to them that like, there is an infinite amount of knowledge you can have about Magic, but you need to have extremely little knowledge about Magic to have a lot of fun. Like, you don't really need to know anything at all about the game to just have a great time playing it with your friends.
Yep. So I think Foundations is awesome. All of that to say, besides my slight trepidation around like exactly two of the cards they showed off, which is like, oh, it is also like, I think objectively funny, especially as someone who does now operate much more from a commander background, to see Llanowar Elves and be like, red alert to go back to Eldraine,
like, Oko, and why it was so bad is because we had Gilded Goose to make a turn to Oko. So there's definitely some things to be worried about there, but
there was definitely a lot of kind of gross stuff around Dominaria Standard because Dominaria had Llanowar Elves in it. So, but hey, Foundations is pretty dang cool. I agree with Emma.
I'm just glad it exists. I just want people to play more Magic.
Yes, and definitely.
This is going to make it easier for them. Also, with like the 5+ year standard rotation, a new Magic player can build a deck from Foundations and it will just not rotate, which is massive.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's just like, oh, I have these cards. Or even if they're not all going to be from Foundations, that does just like provide a solid core of cards that you'll always have to mess around with. And you don't have to worry about getting new ones. No matter what. Anything else from this preview panel? Anything else, Emma?
Foundations was the big one that took up a good chunk of this preview panel. The second one that took up a lot of time was Duskmourn, which is the it's the release after Bloomborough. It drops September 27th, I want to say. And this is the Stranger Things 70s, 80s kind of slasher horror style theme standard set, where you're in a big spoopy house that is constantly growing with endless rooms, and there's some demons lurking around, and people have got to escape it. And the people escaping are all like the planeswalkers. So Kaito's in it, the Wanderer's in it, Tyvar is the jock, the typical, you know, horror jock with the chainsaw having a laugh, that kind of thing, or with a baseball bat. It's very like that style of horror. It's not for me personally, but a lot of people seem pretty excited for it. It's releasing close-ish to Halloween as well, like before Vegas. So people are going to love it.
I would certainly put this in the category of like magic characters in a funny hat sort of thing. It's fun though. It's campy. I don't know. It's all another drop in the bucket of
it's kind of cliche, but people just love that style of horror. And if people love that, that's great. The art direction seems fantastic for it. It's really strong. From what
that's one
seen.
Part I'm very excited about. The different art treatments are very cool. The art references I think are very fun and cool. It seems like a like Universes Beyond kind of set, but it'll be fun, I'm sure.
Yeah, you got Deliriums coming back, which was a really cool mechanic back in like Shadows of Innistrad period. Makes sense for it to return here. There's a new cycle of ley lines coming. They revealed one of the white ley line, which cared about life gain. Also, for the Commander precons, Arch Enemy is coming back as well. So it's very House on the Haunted Hill, where you're playing together, and then somebody's the traitor, and then you've got to beat the traitor. They brought back Arch Enemy, which is also quite cool. Not for me, but I could tell people are stoked for it, and I'm happy for them.
It is. This is the very funny set. This is like the first one where I can ever say it's like egregiously not for me, because horror is just the one thing that my little baby butt has not been able to handle. I cannot do horror.
For me,
even the like silly campy horror. No thanks.
I've had enough horror lately because of Phyrexia and March in the Machine and just proper funky body horror. And I understand this is a bit more campy and a bit unserious, but it's like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this genre. And then after that, they did like 10 minutes on Bloomborough, which didn't matter because preview start on July 9th, which is like next week. So
Yippee!
They did a really cool animation for Bloomborough, which I recommend trying to find on YouTube. It's basically an animation of like the premise of Bloomborough, and it's very sort of old school Red Wall animation, mice fighting monsters. It's very good.
Well, I shall also find that and link it in the podcast description. Now that we've talked about all of this upcoming Magic product, we might as well move to the section of the show where we usually talk about that. It's time for the
Product Watch. I didn't realize you were waiting for me. My microphone was off.
You or Emma, either one. I was really just waiting for someone to do something.
Emma, do you want to do?
No. I thought Cal was like building the suspense.
I thought so too at first. Yeah, that's, I was like, oh, clearly one of us is supposed
Dan's
to say
is
something.
Perfect.
I was thinking like a who's the pig from Looney Tunes? Just the stuttery. No, nothing? Okay, fine. We can move past it.
I'm not cultured. I'm sorry.
I can't believe you know my ancient cartoon references. Porky Pig. That's the character I'm trying to think
of. Oh, sure.
Yeah, Miss Piggy.
That's the Muppets.
It's time for the Product Watch. Just kidding. There is stuff like that we could talk about, but we'll get into it next week. Bloomborough previews are starting. We'll have a whole lot to talk about next week, I'm sure. There is one tiny bit of housekeeping in the product watch, though.
Did you know there's a set coming out this Friday that nobody cares about?
That's right.
Do I?
Top 10 asses in Magic the Gathering is here.
Oh, that's coming out this week?
Yeah, Friday.
That's crazy. Nuh-uh. The whole thing got revealed already?
Yeah, it got revealed like in three days last week.
I don't think I read a single one of them.
No, you did. I think you read Smoke Bomb, which we talked about
earlier. Okay, I read Smoke Bomb, and I read the Leonardo da Vinci one when that originally got spoiled. I guess I haven't read any of the other ones.
Yeah, not missing much.
Assassin's Creed. That's for me to dub over me saying top 10 asses in Magic the Gathering.
I think you just let that one run as is.
I agree.
So yeah, when I said Modern Horizons 3 got its moment in the spotlight as the newest Magic set for barely any time, it's because Assassin's Creed is almost here. If you like Assassin's Creed, go and buy the cards. I'm sure someone, this set is for someone, and the set is for people who like Assassin's Creed, kind of like we talked in the last episode. I have not been able to like read or retain a single one of these cards. They exist now.
It's cool for somebody.
Yeah.
It's just bad timing.
Mm.
Like real bad timing. Because
this is also not indicative of the quality of the cards, but I did see one card where the art was just a guy in a hoodie and blue jeans, and I was like, that's
Desmond.
Funny.
That's Desmond. Okay, that's the cool main character. Because they literally just took the sprites from the game and just touched them up, because why would they do anything else? It makes sense to do that.
I mean, I guess.
But the problem with Assassin's Creed is you've got Modern Horizons 3. My thumbs are up. My fingers are up, by the way. I'm doing a count. There's no Commander product, which seems like a huge miss for Universes Beyond set. And thirdly, Assassin's Creed Shadow was meant to release this month. It got put back until November. So this is another release where Wizards has just been screwed over due to like the development hell of video games. Because we had it with Baldur's Gate way back when. And it's just like, well, this Wizards can't move releases as fluid as, say, Ubisoft and a video game. So it just looks really bad.
Yeah, those sorts of like release dates and things are set in stone so far
Wizards,
in the future.
Wizards are so strict, they can't move stuff, obviously. Yeah. Like they can't push this back to November. They've got foundations to talk about.
Yeah, and that's definitely not the
that is
there
a Wizards
are maybe,
fault.
Maybe, there are maybe other sets where, like, if it was a different set coming out in November, they maybe could have pushed them a little close together, though we all know how that went for Unstable and 40K. That was kind of rough. But you definitely don't want to try to take any air out of the room for either a fairly premium Universes Beyond property or your brand new rebranding and trying a new thing with core sets. That'll be around for 5 years. So, yep, Assassin's Creed, it's here. Speaking of things that people like, what if we go to the co-host notebook? How do we feel about that one?
I like stuff.
I also like stuff. I don't know if... Have we proven that the listeners like this part?
Welcome to the co-host notebook where...
Cal refusing to answer that question.
Hey, welcome to the co-host notebook, the part of the show where we talk about what Emma and Dan like exclusively. Emma, what do you like today?
So I've been traveling for the last 2 weeks, so I haven't really spent much time to do fun things. I guess my hobby over the last 2 weeks has been sitting on aeroplanes and waiting in delays like an adult, and it's very boring.
Sounds horrifying.
However, the Steam sale is now on, and I have purchased a couple of games that are in the Steam sale that I am excited to play, such as the rest of the Dragon Age games that I missed out on because they're like a couple of bucks. Mm-hmm. And also Disco Elysium, because I love RPGs that have a political narrative, because I'm a nerd. So Disco, I'm excited to get into that one.
Disco Elysium is incredible. Heavily recommend. You should just start playing that one right now while Dan talks about the things that
do you
want
me to screen share or?
Yeah, just a little screen sharing in the podcast recording.
But no, largely unexciting because I've been traveling a bunch, so.
That's fair. Dan, Anything exciting? Anything that you have written down?
Well, obviously, loving? Episode 420 of Skibbity Toilet came out this week. So the toilet comes... No, the guy comes out of the toilet. You know the deal. I've been spending a lot of time in the woods. There's been a lot of really good movies coming out lately. Tons of really great horror movies coming out this summer, which I know both of you don't care about. But me and the Scrybabies have been going to the movies a lot. That's been a lot of fun. So
nice. Sounds fun.
Been spending a lot of time in the movie theater. Been spending a lot of time buying records. I actually, this past weekend, saw the singular best record collection I've ever seen in my entire life. This guy had maybe 2,000 records, so like a relatively small collection.
Yeah.
But every single one was like original pressing James Brown, original pressing Pharoah Sanders. I almost spent like all of the money I've ever made in that room, but I had to like rip myself away. But found some really great records there, and I can't wait to go back. And no, I will not tell you where it is because I don't want to dox myself.
Will you tell me where it is?
It won't matter to you because this is just in some guy's house.
Oh, I know.
It's one of those collections.
I'm going to show up at that guy's house.
Okay, I'll bring you if you come back to Redacted. I'll bring you.
Question for both of you. Are you doing anything for America Day, or is what you like to call Independence Day?
I do like calling it that.
I like said America Day. I like calling it Freako Mode Day. Mm-hmm. Like, go freaky. Go freaky for America.
Okay.
Yeah, describe. Go on.
It involves sitting in my backyard with a 30 rack of Miller High Life. I will not be answering any other questions.
That's a pretty good one. I think I'm going to watch extremely old movies, and there will be fireworks happening outside of my friend's apartment that I'll be able to see from inside the apartment. So it'll be nice. Like sort of festive, but unintentionally.
The best kind of festive.
I think our friend group that we have here in Columbus does take any opportunity to get together and like play cards and drink beer. So that's probably what cool. We'll be doing. So.
Oh, I'm going to teach someone how to play the basic land game. I guess that's what I'm planning there you on go. For.
BLG, baby.
Emma, are you doing anything to celebrate the election of your new king?
Vote, I guess. I'm voting on July 4th because that's when it starts. And I guess it'll be great to see the government crumble and then like another government come in and they'll just be as bad. And it'll be like, I love fascism.
Basically. It's like an allegory for another country I've heard of.
Well, America.
That country is called the State of Denial, which is what I'm in, thinking about how long it's going to take for me to edit this half of the show.
I've got
wait, the funny political fart joke.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not really a joke. It's more of a fun fact. So in the UK, we call a fart a Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So Donald Trump is Donald Fart. That was way more I was expecting out of that, to be honest. So
the delivery was just so fantastic because I really thought it was going to be a joke, and you were right. It was just a fact.
Yeah, it was just a fact.
It's good.
There you go, folks.
Emma living up to the Emma Pee Pee Poo Poo Part Low moniker.
Subscribe to the Patreon, folks. That's just what you get.
Exactly. And on that note, that's all we have for this episode of the Herald's Horn. Dan, Emma, do you have anything to leave our listeners with before we go on our merry, berry way?
Emma, you go first.
You go first.
Okay. Subscribe to me on YouTube and on Twitch and on Twitter and all that stuff, moderately and on MSMTG. And also the Scrybabies, because as long as people watch their stuff, my rent gets paid. So
that's subscribe
to them on all platforms.
Also, read my content on TCG Player because that also helps getting my rent paid, and I really appreciate living. So,
I love my house. It's where I keep all my stuff.
Yeah, same.
And read my content on TCG Player because that helps my rent get paid and Emma's rent get paid. All right, we have a great interview for you coming up right now. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Thanks for listening to this podcast episode. If you want to help support the podcast, check out our Patreon. You'll get a sticker in the mail and access to our Patreon exclusive content, which I'm always cooking up more of every day. We've got bonus questions with guests, exclusive interviews, me thought dumping about magic in my life. What else could you want? Plus, when we read letters to the editors, those sent through Patreon DMs or the Discord get first priority. Yep, we have a Discord that you'll be thrown into. Come talk to me about professional wrestling. Anyways, without any further ado, let's get back into this episode. And welcome back. Today, I am joined by Derek of the PEDH, or Popper Elder Dragon Highlander, or Popper Commander Rules Committee, to talk about Derek and to talk about Popper Commander. Derek, thank you for joining me on this episode of the Herald's Horn.
Thank you for allowing me to join you on this episode of the Herald's Horn.
Of course, Derek. We've gone back and forth on Twitter quite a lot in the past, especially back in the day when I was a little more active on Twitter.com, because you are one of a great many evangelists of the fan-driven sub-format, not even a sub-format, I guess. It is definitely its own thing. Popper Commander, for those who don't know, for me, it's pretty obvious as to what the name Popper Commander translates to. But Derek, can you give us the pitch for what Popper Commander, the format, is?
Yeah, so much like you said, I posit that it's a completely separate format from Commander at this point. We have our own rules, our own ban list. It's really its own thing. And essentially what it boils down to is you can have any uncommon creature in the command zone. Doesn't need to be legendary, just any uncommon creature. That also includes backgrounds, for example, like your background has to be an uncommon background. We have 30 life instead of 40. We have 16 commander damage instead of 21. So life total is just a little bit to account for power level of cards and a flatter kind of power level across the format. And then your 99 just has to be all common cards, printed at common, either in a printed product or Magic Online. We follow like the Popper, the 60 card Popper card legalities.
Yeah, so like whatever legality is legal in Popper is what you would then follow. Much like basically. Commander follows like Vintage.
Yeah.
For example.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, like Astronaut's Altar, for example, is a common. Beetleback Chief was a card that was printed in Plane Chase, printed as a common in Vintage Masters Online. That's a common for the purposes of a format. That's pretty much it.
Is there really much of a ban list?
Two cards, and as a CDH player, you'll recognize these: Mystic Remora and Rissic Study.
Yeah, those are both technically commons.
They've been kicked out. It's interesting when you look at the cards that are available at common, you quickly realize that these two are egregious power outliers. And what they ended up doing was just I'll preface it by saying, like, because the power level across the format is so much flatter with commons, we are able to pay a lot of attention to like the competitive metagames. And they were doing a lot of harm on that side of the format. And obviously, like, even in casual games, like, do you pay the one is like grading, like it's something that nobody likes to hear. So it was pretty close to unanimous vote to kick them all out.
Yeah, no, that certainly makes sense. And even if they were like kind of close on the power level spectrum, they are notably some of the most annoying Magic cards of all time to play against. So that's not exactly a play experience that if you were, say, for example, starting from zero and kind of just getting to do your own thing, just get them out of there. Get them out of there.
No room.
So, Derek, a little bit about yourself. How did you start playing Magic the Gathering?
Oh, boy. So, my uncle, back in 1995 or so, was a sports card dealer in the Northeast, Cape Cod, in that area. And he just came into Magic, like, selling Magic cards at, events and fairs and these sorts of things. And he got into the game that way and started selling cards. And sort of, I just kind of glommed on by osmosis. The first packs I had the pleasure of opening were like Chronicles. See, like, beautiful white-bordered Brass Men and Fallen Angels, these sorts of things.
Some classics.
Yeah, some really great evocative cards with really great evocative artwork. And that's kind of what drew me in. And the art of the game is something that I carry, as a huge part of my experience of the game now. But from there, just playing at home, making up rules because we're too stupid to understand the rule books at that time, playing with whatever rules you make up with my brother and so on. My dad got into the game years later, and I'd travel around with him. Being in like the DC area, like Star City was very active in that region. So got to play in a lot of like tournaments, like PTQs, these sorts of things. I was never like successful as a competitive player, but it was fun. My dad liked it. He was good at the game. I was much less good at the game, but it was a great time.
As one is, you know.
And then I got out of the game a little bit when I graduated high school. So going to college, I didn't really play any. Got back into the game 2013. So like from 2005 to 2013, basically from Ravnica through Return to Ravnica, I was out of the game. And when I got back into it, Commander was the thing that really compelled me to just get back into the game that much harder, because I had a pretty deep collection of cards already playing for so long. So that's pretty what I've been doing ever since then. And then I found Pauper Commander, devoted a lot of time to that. And, you know, here we are now. You know, there's a lot of minutia in there, a lot of history, but we'll just say that that's how I got to where I am.
Definitely the overview. Got back into Magic at pretty much the exact same time that I started playing Magic, which is kind of fun.
It's a good time.
RTR, inflection point for a lot of people, it seems, one way or the other, right around there. Like, a lot of people got back into it around Innistrad, Return to Ravnica. A lot of people started around there.
I remember back when I first started playing again, like, I would watch the SCG Open streams on the weekends, and I'd be constantly Googling cards as I was watching, because I have no idea. I don't know how to play. I don't know what a Planeswalker is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what a Snapcaster Mage is. Mm-hmm. What are these cards? What do they do? And you know, that's kind of how I it's carried through into how I approach the game now. Is I'm very like research heavy. I have a very deep card encyclopedic knowledge now. I love that stuff. Too much brain power, maybe wasted, maybe put to better use. But you know what? It's there, and it's not going anywhere.
That's magic. I think that's just magic, really.
Yeah, it must be.
So, Pauper Commander, you got into it. You said kind of. Is there an official like start date of Pauper Commander, or is it? It's like as a formalized format. Is there a beginning, or was it just kind of like people being like, "Oh, we think this is a fun way to play," and something more coalesced around that? What is the beginning history of Pauper?
Yeah, I mean, initially it's pretty much just that. Like the first kind of inklings of it as something that existed in the public knowledge was back in like 2013, 2012, like on old MTG Salvation forums, basically, because you know, the idea of let me play Commander but just use all common cards is not like a hard conclusion to reach as like a smart Magic player.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's not something that I think any one person invented. It's more like here's a way that we can play, and then more.
Yeah, here's a fairly logical thing to do almost.
Mm-hmm. And then people started trying to formalize rules around it pretty unsuccessfully. Like there were a couple threads in MTG Salvation that didn't really go very far. Someone else a couple years later decided to try making like a Weebly website to host official rules. Didn't really go very far until about 2017. There's a website called Peach Homebase, pdhhomebase.com, which is where it's like a kind of the central hub of the format now. Mm-hmm. But back then it was mostly just a website run by one guy on Reddit named Salty River. His name's Kyle. He lived in China, I think, at the time. And he just has the website where he was writing about Pauper Commander. He put out a call on Reddit, like, hey, does anyone else want to write articles? I want to like grow the format. I was one of the people that initially responded to that. That's where I got involved. A couple of the folks as well that have kind of like waxed and waned in terms of their involvement with the format. But then I started just writing articles for this website pretty infrequently, like maybe once every 6 months or so. I'm a very slow writer because I'm very thorough. It kind of started that way, and then we realized that like this was a good opportunity now that we had some content under our belts to like actually push an effort to consolidate rules and formalize something in a way that had a lot more weight behind it than what was going on before, like rules that we could market. So what ended up happening is we each kind of went off and tried to research all different ways we could find that people were playing this format and just kind of draw a line of best fit. Kind of pick rules that were reflective of the origins of the format, rules that, benefited from a, like a rule standpoint or a gameplay vantage point, like the 30 life thing, for example. It just seemed to work really well. And it's something that people had been experimenting with in the past. So that's something we stuck with. uncommon, any uncommon creature, and not just legendaries, has been a thing since the first inceptions.
Yeah, well, because even
the rarity thing was always a factor, but back then the only uncommon legendaries were with all the ones from Legends that are vanillas.
Yeah, because it didn't become like it was like. For those who don't know, the history of Uncommon Legends is like, yeah, there was a couple way back when, and then it was such legendary stuff was such a theme in Dominaria, the Dominaria set from, 2018, 2019? About
that. Yeah, that's where you see a lot more of them.
Yeah, they specifically introduced, like, for the first, like, specific time, oh, here are legendaries at Uncommon, this is what legendaries at a lower rarity than rare look like. Because we need them for the limited environment, they went away for a while, and now it's actually pretty common to see legendary creatures
everywhere.
Kind of almost randomly at Uncommon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could play, like, Barktooth Warbeard was, like, your only Rakdos option, because, like, I think maybe there's, like, one samurai in Kamigawa that was a legendary, and it was an Uncommon, but really nothing. So, Uncommon creatures have been, like, a foundation, like, a bedrock of the format. And one of the, like, the big selling points, I think, in terms of, like, diverging into a completely different play experience than Commander, purely on the virtue of, like, for example, like, Cal, think of it this way. You take an Elf deck in Commander or CDH, right? And you have, like, your Marwyns, you have now this new Elodomri card, which I'm sure is complete gas. You have, you know, all of these, like, what's the name of the guy? Azuri, like, all of these Elf commanders. But, like, what if you could play Heritage Druid as your commander? Like, how does that change the calculus on, like, how your Elf deck plays and what you put
in? Oh, I have perfect mana all of the time.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've never been, like, the most active on social media. When I got back into it and then started engaging a lot more, something that I became known for is my Heritage Druid deck, which is built around playing a one mana elf on turn one, 2 1 mana elves on turn two, a random one mana elf and Heritage Druid, tapping them for three, playing a three drop, untapping with 2 lands and 3 elves, playing a 5 drop, because the deck is 23 lands. So you don't bet on playing your third land, you just calculate it so that you're playing like 11 mana worth of spells by turn three. And that's just what the deck does. Like, It's so different from any other Elf deck I've ever played. And now we have, like, Priest of Titania has been upshifted to Uncommon.
It's
like, that's a thing.
Because, you could play it in the 99, but it's never been an Uncommon, so you can't play with it as your commander.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that's also really cool, is, like, you know, even reprint sets, we still get new cards because things are shifting in rarity.
That's so... You know, I haven't actually thought about that before. I just wanted to, like, drop an anecdote about, like, the pre-legendary era. Back in when I was in college, there was one younger, younger kid, but he was in high school at the time, which, of course, when you're in college, might as well be a baby already.
Right. Swaddled.
Exactly. As one does, even though that was just you 2.5 years ago, you're like, who is this child coming around? Exactly. And he was, because he was a high schooler, he had, like, no money, right? Neither did us in college, but we were pretending. And so he was always trying unsuccessfully to get us to play Pauper Commander. And I do remember that he was a Crackling Drake Fiend. As soon as the Return to Ravnica sets came out, he was just a fiend for Crackling Drake. And when I saw Crackling Drake as a commander, I was like, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. And then I finally played again with his Crackling Drake deck, and it was a lot of fun. I think that is one of the really cool appeals to the format to me, is, like you were saying, like, imagine you can play, like, an Elf Ball deck or an Elf Matters deck or whatever, but you're, rather than having to, not have to, but, like, Heritage Druid as a commander or even Priest of Titania as a commander is a whole lot different than so many of the legendary creatures that have kind of been, like, purposefully manufactured to be elves commanders, right? Rather than, like, maybe an elf payoff piece. And or even, like, Crackling Drake, for example, as a commander, versus so many of the, you know, is it spells matter type of commanders that have come out over time, or is it legendaries of the past, which did kind of fit within a specific archetype of what they could do or couldn't do. You know, usually you're playing is it, and you want an is it commander, even back in 2015, 2016, 2019, which is a way different heuristic of how commander works than what it did now. you're probably going to be trying to maybe like storm off a little bit or
spells matter kinds of stuff.
And like if Crackling Drake is your commander, you're still going to care about spells. But you're going to care about spells because you can kill your opponent with two hits from your 7-power flying Crackling Drake.
You know, it's a quote unquote spells matters deck where those spells are like team or battle.
Yeah, rage. Exactly. It's like team or battle rage. He gets bigger and gets double strike. Yeah, gotcha.
yeah, exactly. And that card still has like a lot of champions right now. Like it's still a very popular card.
It's such
card.
A sick card. Just pay some mana, draw a card, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
And it never gets smaller. You can exile a graveyard, it doesn't matter. Like that card's really resilient.
Exactly. So you have kind of explained some of like the appeal of Pauper Commander, and you obviously have been so involved in Pauper Commander that you are on the Pauper RC. Not to ask. So I think this is maybe a question for those who are like entirely disconnected from the Pauper EDH community. I think when a lot of people think of like a rules committee or some kind of like community driven format who have people who run the format. You know, we have now the Pauper committee running Pauper.
Yep.
We have the EDH rules committee running EDH. And we also have like the main other like standout is there's a team of people who decide and vote on the points list for Canadian Highlander. And so not to ask, what do you do, Derek? But in a format that has not actually banned any cards since like the very first, did you ban Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora in like 2021, right? Is when they were banned?
Ish, yeah.
And so since then you have not had to ban any cards. So what does the work of a rules committee that does not have to ban any cards look like?
So a lot of it is just receiving hatred from the community for decisions
that they don't certainly. Like. Of course.
We are, you know, focused on like growing the format. We try and make sure that like we are marketing the format appropriately, setting expectations appropriately, just being like the first and foremost like ambassadors for the format. That's like a huge part of it. Also being stewards of the format. Like I think that it's underappreciated, and it's something that like Sheldon, for example, would talk about a lot, is being a steward of EDH. And that just means like, and granted, like my personal position on things is a lot of times much more conservative than a lot of people. You know, like when the decision around common and uncommon backgrounds was pretty controversial. I was the driving force behind not allowing common backgrounds in the command zone for a number of reasons. I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of it, but like it's like these sorts of things, when they come up, we need to think about how we need to approach them.
Yeah, somebody has
like,
to make a decision format. Because people are going to ask the question.
Yeah, and initially, I mean, a good example of this is like back when Eldraine came out, original Throne of Eldraine, and there were adventures. Like, adventures were something we'd never seen before, and we had to decide how they worked. This was way before there were like legendary adventures now, where like the RC, EDH RC has like said this is how they work, whatever. Like, we had to come up with that decision years ago.
Because there's a lot of uncommon creatures that are also adventures.
Exactly. And it was kind of funny, like, when legendary adventures got printed, like we were able to say, oh yeah, we've been doing this for years, let us tell you exactly how this
works. Hey guys, don't worry, we're on
like, you know, brush your shoulders off a little bit. But you know, and those kinds of things really kind of cemented in our mind, because before that we were just like very engaged community members. We're not an RC at that point, I don't think. The time's always a little bit hazy in the last few years, but it just goes to show, like, when you're trying to grow a format and you're trying to make sure that it's a wide enough umbrella, that is accessible, right? You need to make sure that everybody's playing by the same underlying foundation. And it became very clear that, like, with all these people with different opinions about how adventures should work, like, there needs to be a central hand saying, this is how they work, this is how they work in the format, and, like, we're just going to move forward from here. And we found ourselves in a really good position to do that because we were so deeply entrenched in the format, more so than, I think, any other group of people playing it at that point. You know, and now like the format's been growing pretty explosively over the last year and a half or so. Like I've gone on Shivam's show twice now to talk about the format. I know a professor did a video on the format last year, scripted by the wonderful Bobby Christine, who was also a player of the format. There's all kinds of streams, content creators now getting into it as well. Like a lot of them will have one or two Pauper Commander nights a month on their streams.
I can say this from like from my perspective, when I was on Playing with Power, one of our biggest requests was from it's not one-to-one connected, but the CPEDH scene is also quite large and also very vocal and very out there and very excited about what they're doing as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the, another great thing about like the last year or so is there's been a really big push for like events, like tournaments. There's a few like really great quarterly tournaments that get run every year. For example, like Sanctuary PDH is run by a friend of mine. He just organizes quarterly CPDH tournaments. So it usually gets like between like 20 and 30 people. It's like four rounds and a top four. It takes end in Saturday afternoon and there's commentary and everything. I mean, it's a whole, whole affair.
That's so sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's only getting bigger. So, you know, now with us, we've recently like restructured the rules committee a little bit. There used to be a lot more of us. Now there's just five. And we also have a number of content creators and people that we trust in like an advisory group sort of role, like the EDH, infrastructure has. So like everything's in a pretty good place right now, like structurally, administratively. And we're just really focused on just spreading it. Like none of us, I think, going into it, were really like content creator types of people or influencers in any way. We're just mostly like administrators trying to like adapt to the internet age of like internet marketing and all this stuff. Something, you know, that's not something that I'm familiar with. I'm necessarily familiar with. I'm not a content creator. I'm not an influencer. I try to be a personality as much as I can because I have one of those, you know?
Yeah, certainly.
But yeah, I mean, it's just learning and growing constantly. And luckily the community has been like super, super great about it and stepping in to fill in the gaps where we need them to.
So I think when I maybe got more into, you know, not to continually draw comparisons to EDH when we kind of established at the beginning that it is kind of an entirely different thing.
Well, I have a lot in common too.
Yeah, certainly. Very popular, singleton, have a card in the command zone, community built up from the ground up formats. Yeah. I think that a lot of how I felt about EDH when I started, which was like 2013, like I was kind of an EDH player from the beginning, like begrudgingly, and then eventually coming to enjoy it, going from, oh, this is the only way I can play Magic to, hey, this is pretty sick, actually.
Yeah, the only way I need to play Magic. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. With my little PTQ grinder era in there, and, you know, as everyone maybe goes through. But back then it did kind of feel a lot more like it's a like community thing, because like I know the RC like tries a lot, and it still is ostensibly community driven in some way, and they take a lot of community feedback, and the people involved are kind of all like community members. But it just like got so big, and Wizards got so involved with dictating the cards that were good because they literally create them and all that kind of stuff. You know, Wizards gets involved every single set by printing a new precon, and every precon has some kind of card that matters to someone, and, you know.
Oh boy, howdy, don't they, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that's, like, very cool and nice in its own way, but I think, like, where, you know, where Popper EDH gets at some of that original magic of Commander is that, like, a lot of what you have to work with is just commons, and commons now are more powerful than they used to be, obviously, because they changed how they wanted to make limited sets and all that kind of stuff. But especially when so many cards that people would like to use are just like random uncommon creatures, you know, that totally gets a lot more at like the, well, this is what I have to work with, and that's cool kind of philosophy that I really enjoyed about EDH when I started playing.
Right. Yeah. So I have two big thoughts here.
Yes.
The first is that like it goes back to the heart of like restrictions breed creativity, like that old adage, which I subscribe to wholeheartedly. Like nothing makes you kind of rethink a lot of how you contextualize these cards when you can't play with anything other than them, right? Like just on my desk, like a Deadly Recluse, right? A 1/2 reach death touch for a green and a colorless, right? Like in the right deck, like this card is absolutely busted. It blocks everything in the format. It trades with everything. There's bite spells, you know, like Rabid Bite deals its damage equal to its power to another creature. So it just Doomblades things. And there's like tons of redundancy too. Like there's a lot of cards like this. There's a lot of cards like Rabid Bite. You know, I can list them all off the top of my head because I play mono green decks all the time in this format. Rabid Bite, Master's Rebuke, Ram Through, Cosmic Hunger, this new one, Horrid Assault, Fight Spells. Like, you know, there's tons of redundancy. So, you know, how I like to describe it, a lot of the primary play patterns is a lot like limited. when they've been making more and more signposts on common, like modern limited design is really catered to this with signposts on common creatures. They just set you on a build path and it's very easy to get into the format, which kind of hits on the second thing is that like availability is such a, or not availability, accessibility is a huge part of the game right now. That I don't think enough people are talking about. Like Modern Horizons 3 came out and now we have like eight $70 mythics or whatever.
That have been added to a pile of like $70+ mythics from Magic's history and, that you quote unquote have to have.
And these are all cards that people want to play. Yeah, these are all cards that people want to play in Commander. And like not only are the cards inexpensive, but they're so easy to acquire. And because like there's so much redundancy, the power level in the format is so much flatter that you don't have these like wild power level disparities. Like in any random casual pod, if you bring a like a quote unquote like a CPDH deck to a casual pod, you very well might just get stomped because like the combo decks, they can win on like one turn with like, you know, Freed from the Reel or whatever, like all these busted cards that exist at common. Like they can combo out a table, but like you have to play a game of Magic to get there. You can't, there are no like efficient ways to tutor them up, very little redundancy in like those specialized kinds of effects. It's like Freed from the Reel. There's no other card that does that. It's just that. Like Ashnod's Altar combos, it's the only card that does that. So you need that one card and you need to find it. And there's very few ways to do that. So you have to play like a functional game of Magic in order to combo. And if you sit down at a casual pod with a combo commander, they're going to beat you to death before you can do it. So there's a lot less of like, you know, these bad beat stories of sitting down to a pod and you're there with your casual deck playing a game of casual commander and then somebody combos you out on turn three or whatever, you know.
Yep.
You don't just get spiked out of games.
And it's a seven. It's a seven, please. It's
yeah, exactly.
A seven. Oh.
Like every deck in Pauper Commander is literally a seven. And
yeah,
it's just a fact of the matter, not an opinion, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like metagame dependent, really. And the competitive decks are out to do a certain thing. And in a competitive metagame, you know, they're able to do that. They very well just may get crushed in any other environment.
And I think that is like one of the truly appealing things to me about PDH, like from the outside, you know, it's classic. I've had people for 4 years, you know, well, if we go all the way back to Solomon from Superfly Comics and Games, hey, Solomon, if you're listening, you probably are actually, he is now a grown man. you know, I've had people in my ear about PDH for, holy moly, 6-7 years now. And
good.
It's, yeah, exactly. The community is passionate, Derek.
They sure are.
They always have been.
No one knows more than I do.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Sometimes I have to rein them in, like,
yeah, exactly.
Like call the dogs back, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. but and I have never exactly gotten into it, much because, like, much how I have never gotten back to the PTQ grind, or how I don't really have time to play Draft on Arena, even though I'd really like to, or even CDH on MitGo or whatever, because, you know,
there's just so many things to do.
There's so many things to do, especially now that, you know, I'm a little older, I have a busy life. Everything adds up, but the appeal of PDH and why it's like so high on my like things to get into list if I have the chance is because of what you were just talking about. Like the concept of equitable formats really appeal to me, and that is why, for example, I do really enjoy so much about the CEDH scene. It's missing the equitable on like power level part, right? But the scene as a whole is so proxy friendly, et cetera, mm-hmm, that
exactly.
A great many people can play the deck they want to, even if it has a Lion's Eye Diamond and a Time Twister and, you know, all that kind of stuff in it, much less even, you know, owning 10 fetch lands costs $300 or whatever when they're cheap. Yeah. In Pauper EDH, I know there are some really expensive commons from back in the day. Like if
you can find ways to do it, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Like if Rhystic Study wasn't banned, it would be a $45 common technically.
Yeah. Like
if
you're legal, a maniac and you need to have your, you know, your foil promo Priest of Titania and your foil masks snuff out and like those sorts of things.
Oh but, yeah, exactly. You could you can get real pricey with it if you want, but
yeah.
I have to imagine the average PEDH deck costs a couple pennies a card.
Yeah. I mean, most decks, if you like to it, including basic lands, like whole thing, attaching a price value to every single card, most decks with including staples will probably run you maybe like 40-ish. If you're like playing a deck that has like powerful cards that don't see much print anymore. Like Snuff Out, for example. Like if you're playing like a mono black deck and you have your Snuff Outs and Deadly Disputes and all those cards that cost like maybe a dollar, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, very rarely will they cost you any more than like a Commander pre-con, you know? And
yeah,
these are decks that you're not going to take to a table and like need to upgrade, really. Like, you just, it's all upgrade from like a value perspective, right? Like you don't need to get a Smothering Tithe for your deck. You don't have to shell out for anything like that. You just like, oh, I need this 25-cent card instead of this 15-cent card, you know, like that kind of stuff. So it's much more manageable. And yeah, like pretty much the format is still so wildly underexplored. There's so much to do. There's so little in terms of like cards that are just, I mean, you could make a bad deck if you wanted to. There's cards that'll let you do that. But like any like uncommon from a standard set in the last 3 or 4 years is going to produce a very reasonable deck very, very easily. Like those cards are very good at guiding you in a direction and showing you what to do. That's a really great entry point to the format.
And I think like probably one of the big advantages of that too, like you said, talking about some of the newer stuff, like once you build a deck, it's not exactly like, you know, like Smothering Tithe comes out in the Return to Ravnica sets, and then yeah, suddenly a whole bunch of people are like, oh brother, I need to spend $30 on this new white card. Yeah.
It's like, oh, Smothering Tithe got reprinted. Now it's only $15 instead of $30.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. But opposed to like, oh, this new common got printed in, whew, okay, it's not constructed playable, so it's not even a buck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you go to any like Magic Con and you just walk by the draft event tables, you just pick up their chaff, you have a deck right there.
Exactly. And so I think we have kind of gotten like a holistic picture of what you enjoy about PDH so much, and you know, why you're so enthused about it. You know, it's a very interesting format because you have a lot of chances to use a great many things in the command zone and otherwise that you would never be able to otherwise. It is a very equitable format in two ways, such that naturally it's pretty power flat unless you're like specifically doing something like purposefully bad, maybe.
Sure.
Yeah. Which, hey, I have EDH decks like that. I get it.
Exactly.
And very equitable in the cost, in that, yeah, you could go and get your judge promos, et cetera, very quickly, spend $100 on a foil common if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Any foil Ponder gamers before the year 2017 in chat?
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Exactly.
You get your foil gushes, you know, like,
yeah,
those sorts,
exactly,
of things.
Exactly. Foil preordained before they printed it for the second time. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, you know, like maybe they max out at $50. It's like, great. Awesome. A great many people can afford that in comparison to EDH, where if you're not in a proxy friendly environment, the card you might want to play costs that much. Very equitable format, a very intriguing format. Is there anything else about PDH that just really does it for you, Derek?
So something that I care a lot about is like the ability to teach players the format, like, or teach players, like teaching Magic through the format, I think is one of its greatest assets. I already think that Commander's a pretty good way to do that, for a lot of reasons. I think that PDH is a lot better because, again, like, the cards are very simple. Like, you have cards like, you know, Cancel, you have cards like, you know, Rabid Bite, you have cards like, you know, Shock, like these very simple spells that do something. They're very basic. It's very nuts and bolts. It's a great way to teach people mechanics of the game in a way where like those things are not easily outclassed. It's a very safe environment to do those things. You know, I've taught a lot of people like how to play Magic like through this sort of infrastructure, and it's been really beneficial. For like a lot of those reasons that you covered, like it's not something that's intimidating to build on. Like once people get into the game this way, they can like stick with it in a way that's not, you know, going to edge them out on power level or price. You know, it's really great. And it's like you mentioned before, like it's totally community driven, which is like one of the most beautiful things about it. Like that's why everyone's so passionate about it, because everybody's been just like playing it for so long in their own little corners. And then only recently have we like consolidated everything back in like 2017. I said, you know, so maybe 7-8 years ago now. So like we're still growing and there's still a lot of stuff to discover.
Because, yeah, there's such a big pool of cards. There's so many commons being added all of the time. And in the realm of discoverability, it's not like normal EDH or constructed formats or whatever, where there is kind of an entire infrastructure of people being like, hey, we did all the work and we found the good cards for you, if that's what you're about. In this kind of environment, especially with so many new commons being added every day these days,
you kind of got to
do the work yourself.
Every once in a while, we get a mythic common like Evolution Witness in Modern Horizons 3. Yeah.
Is that the really Evolve spicy, like Eternal Witness mashup?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that card's sick. Yeah.
It's really good. I haven't got a ton of opportunities to play with it, but when I've cast it, it's been like, you think how they put this at that rarity. But yeah, like, I don't know, like, I'm just looking at my desk right now. You're familiar with a card called Marauding Sphinx from Thunder Junction?
I am not.
Let me read it to you. It's a blue-blue 3 colorless mana for a 3/5 flying Vigilance Ward 2 creature. So this thing attacks like crazy.
Yeah, and it doesn't get removed. Yeah.
And then whenever you commit a crime, you surveil 2, and you can only do it once per turn. So, like, this thing is just kind of busted. Like, it's a great commander. Like, you play counter spells, you play bounce spells, you play, you know, creatures that come down and like a mana wars, like creatures that come down and bounce a thing. You commit your crimes, you get your card selection, and it just attacks for free for 3 in the air every turn.
Real quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's this card isn't like super powerful on like the grand spectrum of things, but when you think about like what this does when it hits the battlefield against like a deck full of commons, it's really resilient, it's very aggressive, and it does a lot of stuff to like keep you in the game. Like it's a lot about, you know, just recontextualizing cards, you know, like what now, like with this uncommon creature, like now what cards are good with this that were not good elsewhere, you know. A lot of the same thing like with Commander, but like on a much more fundamental level. It's like I said, it's much more like basic effects, much more nuts and bolts stuff, so you have to kind of get more creative with it.
Certainly I do. In that exact vein, actually, I do have one question. It has been a while now since like what actually maybe it's been, oh never mind, I was gonna ask you how like the recent downshift of murder to common has affected the format, but I forgot that it was actually a common like all the way back in N15.
Yeah. Well, go for the throat only recently has been become a common. For example, as in the Warhammer decks, it was downshifted. It's another staple removal spell, you know. You think about like old formats and like old limited formats and even like Pauper, like the removal is so good compared to the creatures historically. That's only recently begun to shift. Like the creatures have become so much more powerful.
I assume the inclusion of Ward especially has helped out. Like as they removed Hexproof, which was like never ever going to be on an uncommon creature outside of very specific circumstances. I assume they're a little more fresh with Ward than they were with Hexproof.
Yeah,
and that changed up that dichotomy a bit as well.
Like creatures with Ward, it might as well be Hexproof. People are just so scared to remove those creatures. You know, it's just like, I don't know, people have these preconceived notions of like being efficient with their cards, but if you have to kill something, just kill it, you know?
Look, I want to get the maximized value out of my cards every single time. So why would I simply remove anything?
That's what a good Magic player would do. What a good Magic player would do is convince their opponents to remove it for them.
And that's the beauty of CDH, Derek. So let me tell you about my favorite. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to bully you into removing that creature spell, and you're going to like it, Derek.
Oh, my goodness. Well, no, that brings up actually another something else that I think is interesting that I don't think we've touched on is... in that same kind of vein, you know, like politics plays a huge role in this format, just like it does in CDH or Command or whatever. But it's much different in the sense that, like, this is a format that is played vast majority on the battlefield rather than like on
rather
the stack.
Than on the stack, yeah.
Combat is like a really important part of the game because, you know, there are some combos, but there are not a ton of them. And the decks, and like I said before, like the decks that are needing to combo actually have to play like a game of functional magic in order to do that. Which means they need creatures that attack, they need creatures that can block, they need creatures that can just, like, gum up the board sometimes. So, like, you know, a lot of times you see people evaluate cards for Commander, and they say things like, well, it just attacks and blocks, you know, like, so this card's not that great. But like a Colossal Dreadmaw in Pauper Commander is like a must kill. Like you have to get that thing off the board or else you're going to die. Like a 6/6 is already like a very, very serviceable threat because there's not much bigger than that. But it also has trample, so you can't really block it very effectively with all your little gentlemen on the ground, you know? It's like those sorts of dynamics are really important, and that's another reason why it's a lot different than like other multiplayer formats like that. It's just so much on the battlefield, so much happens in combat. So if you like that kind of stuff, like if you like sealed, like that, those sorts of like play patterns are going to appeal to you, I think, and that's why the format's going to stick.
Well, Derek, I think secretly you have convinced me. I think I have to delve through all of the uncommons that can be found throughout Magic the Gathering's history and find the correct one for me. And, you know, secretly, I love Baldur's Gate, the set, so much. It unfortunately will probably be a background pair. I've been looking for an excuse to use a background for so long.
That set is insane for the format. It's one of the best sets for the format ever made, so it's a good place to start.
Well, I guess because it did kind of introduce partner to the format in a lot of
ways. No, we had partner in Commander Masters 1.
Oh, really?
Malcolm Maketis is a Pauper commander
pair. Oh, yeah, they are both uncommons. That's so true. That's so true. All right. I know what I'm building in. Glenhorn Buccaneer, is that a comment? Oh, brother.
One day. It might be one day.
Hey, you know, I know. Yeah, we'll come around to some like pirate pre-con and Glenhorn Buccaneer will randomly be in there at common. And then everything will be ruined. There'll be an A plus B right there.
That's ready to go. Right. It's almost too easy. Hey, if you need a tutoring session, man, let me know.
Oh, I definitely will do. Hey, Derek, thank you for coming on this episode of the Herald's Horn and telling me all about Pauper EDH. I have learned a lot today, and I have also loved learning a lot about what you, someone who is so invested in the format that they would be on the rules committee, enjoys about it as well. Is there anything else you would like to leave with our audience, be it be something we didn't get to, anything you want to plug, anything like that?
Anything we didn't get to, we got to a lot of stuff. I'm just going to say, you know, don't be scared. Find something cool. If there's an uncommon in your draft deck that you think is awesome, build a deck around it. It's a lot of fun. There's all kinds of people on the internet to play with. There's pdhhomebase.com. It's got links to Discords, link to online communities, Reddit, Facebook, all of these things. You can go there, find people to play with. It's a lot of fun. As far as myself, the only thing I really feel like plugging is my X/Twitter account, @DerekDearReader. That's just where I engage with people pretty much exclusively nowadays. And I'm happy to respond to things that people tweet at me. Or if you just want to read things that I tweet into the aether, you can do that too.
Derek, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Herald's Horn podcast.
Thank you, Cal. I've had a wonderful time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Herald's Horn. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info lives in the podcast description. If you want to reach out to me, whether with feedback, you want to give me money, or you just want to send a letter to the editor, hit up editorial@heraldshorn.com. Thanks again for listening to the Herald's Horn. We are having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks. What's a Muppet?
You.
Yeah, I was about to say you are a fucking Muppet.
What's that mean? What's that supposed to mean? What's that supposed to mean?